Hello and welcome back to Jabber with the Jessicabra. I'm Jess, your favorite lichen lady, or I hope it's your favorite lichen lady. I'm here to jabber about the things, yes. And I actually am quite happy to report that this is also because of another college project. I keep saying it, and I'm going to keep saying it, not as an excuse, but as an excuse, because it's an excuse, and a valid excuse at that. I'm currently getting my master's degree, and it takes up a lot of time, especially when you're a mama, to two crazy womb goblins, and your husband, and your house, and your needy cat, and working and all that good stuff. You know, you live life, you understand. And speaking of life, we're going to talk about death. No, seriously, we're really going to talk about death. My last podcast was actually because of a college project, and this one is because of a college project, and I thought this was a very good place for it. We talk about spirituality here, we talk about the paranormal, we talk about psychology and mental health, so that makes this a good place for it. In fact, I hope it is thought-provoking, whether you agree or disagree, or have a completely different belief, or have one that's a mix of this and many, many others. I love gaining perspective, and I know that when we listen to things like this, we like to consider a lot, especially when it's the unknown, but the unknown on a very natural process such as death. So my project is to actually conduct an interview where I ask questions about how someone feels personally about death. And my lucky contestant for this interview is, drumroll please, it's my husband. It's my husband. With my schedule, it is easy for my husband. Also, we're celebrating his 30th birthday in just one day. It is actually 3/28. His birthday is tomorrow, and he is joining the Dirty 30 Club with his wife. So this was actually a really good time because I figured, hey, welcome to the 30s. Let's talk about death. And he laughed, and he likes talking about this concept. We've talked about it before as a husband and wife, and like, hey, what do you want to do if you, like, you know, kick the bucket? But this was more profound, more critical thinking was involved, and I asked him questions that I had developed for this class. However, sneaking in here as current present day Jess, who's actually the Jess who's publishing this today, this is the publishing date of the episode. I was gonna publish it before, everything that you heard just before this, before my presence here, was going to be that and just the interview, and that was gonna be it. But I have quite the additive because I went on a tangent. As we know, I love tangents. I love going weird and quirky and chaotic. That's how I roll. You're just gonna have to settle for this. If you're here as my peer, and you just are here, or you're here even just to hear just the interview, how many times am I going to say here? Probably a lot. Here, let me just do it one more time. Okay, so that is going to be at the end of this podcast episode. And that's about the 12, 13 minutes at the end of this episode is solely just the interview with Ron. And please keep in mind, since I'm inserting myself here after the interview has taken place, my considerations of the interview was I personally feel that much of the interview involved a lot of self-concept on Ron's part. During our time, he reflected quite a bit on how he views himself during the interview on our topic. And many times, he did use comparisons based mostly on how others think or feel about him or the subject basically just involving him. When many of his ideals on life revolved around others, this also kind of tips me off that he bases quite a bit on his interactions and the relationships he creates with others as he lives his own life. And the secondary concept is that Ron's answers were pretty identical to the cultural and contextual factors for early adulthood. His example of his ideas on, like, his life revolving around, you know, me and the kids, working, doing all that he can in his social settings or for everybody, that demonstrates it to a T. In fact, it sounds right on point for the period between the late 20s and through the 30s, where people are focused on love, work, and being contributing member of society, which is actual portion of what cultural and contextual factors are for early adulthood in lifespan development by Coker, Cannon, Dixon, Saxon, and Roller, which is kind of fascinating. So that's my little shindig on that. My little verbal party on what I think about the interview and something worth considering before, you know, I get to hear your ideas and theories and everything on the interview as well. So So if that's what you're looking for, that's where you can find it. So this is where my curiosity went a smidge off the rails. What if I went in a different areas of my various social groups and asked the same questions, basically the same questions, and what would the results be? Well, I really, really derailed because I wanted to do this, and I surveyed 71 adults, the youngest being 19 and the eldest being 79, so between 19 and 79. And I gathered individuals from my closest circle of family and friends, peers from my university in the fields of psychology and counseling, and various other social groupings, like just three or four, and a few people from each that I kind of interact with occasionally or have interacted with in the past. My reasoning was for different levels of outreach, I would then have a range of stages, cultures, beliefs. I wanted as much diversity as I could obtain for this project that I took upon myself. I first asked, there are seven questions. I had asked their age, their gender, their spirituality. I already kind of gave you the age bracket there of everyone who I surveyed and the range of that. The other parts of that first question, how the individuals identify, were 14 male, 50 female, and 7 non-binary. That was just random. That's just how it ended up occurring. I had way more in one category than I did in the others. And when it came to religion or spirituality or none, I had 2 Christian, 3 Catholic, 14 agnostic atheist or agnostic atheist, 15 spiritual, 2 Satanist, 1 Pastafarian, 3 Buddhist, 1, and I'm so sorry if I butcher this, Asesi Ifa, I'm not really well versed in that, 1 Kemetic, 1 Jewish, 2 Wiccan, 10 pagan, and 16 that stated no spirituality, no religion. I asked then, how many of these people find death scary? And 63.4% of everybody said they don't find it scary. In fact, most of the people who said no actually also went on to say it's mostly just sad, or the aspects revolving it are just sad, which I would personally agree in my own opinion, but I'm going to try to leave my opinion out of this because I didn't survey myself. And 36.6 said yes. So 26 of these 71 people agreed, yes, death is scary, or aspects of death, whether it be mine or someone else's, is scary. 45 of the 71 said no, it's just not. Ideas on death, do they differ in the past than they do now for these people? And 73.2% of them said yes, their ideals on death have changed through time, or have changed through an event or any circumstance that could have made it change. It just has not been the same. That's 52 of the 71 people. And 19 of the 71 people said, no, my ideas have never changed, 26.8%. I asked, do you have a belief in an afterlife? And I did include reincarnation. I know a lot of people will say, no, that's not an afterlife. It's just a kind of continuation, basically an afterlife or a continuation of some means, including energy going around or spirits, or I included that all as a belief in the afterlife for this specific survey. And 62% said, yes, they do. 44 of that 71 said they have a belief in that. 23 of the 71 said no. 32.4% do not believe in anything after death. No consciousness, no anything. And 4 were unsure. They just didn't know how to answer. They didn't want to answer. That's 5.6% of them. So the next question I asked was, if you were to pass away tomorrow, if you were to die tomorrow, would you currently be holding regrets at this stage that you are? And this was down. And when I was tallying, I swear it was down to the, I felt very entertained because it was switching off. I was not sure which way it would go. I was not sure if it was going to be yes or no. And it ended up actually swinging in one direction. 34 versus 36. 34 of the 71 said yes, they'd be holding regrets. So 47.9% of everybody said yes, they'd hold regrets. 36 by two people are what broke this ongoing tie through the 71 people that I was tallying said no. So 50.7, about half, it's about 50-50, rounding up, 50-50, 50 said yes, 50 said no, 50%. And one person just said, not sure. They don't know how they'd even gauge it. So, and that's fair enough. So that was 1.4%, one person of the 71. The next question I then asked was, for my last two questions was, when asked the measure of a good life or a life well lived, in their opinion, what would that be? And the answers created and fell into, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 categories. Sorry, I had to count that right in front of me. 7 categories in total. And this, I gauged this. I didn't go in with any categories I built on my own. I only went off the survey answers. And these categories were what had come from these answers. And I kind of just put a check next to the ones to make sure that I had 71 responses. And this is how they ended up being categorized. There was a good life is just by living. Another, just being love, the love you share, the love you give, love in general. Next, being connections that you make in life or relationships that you create or the relationships that you grow up with or that are given to you. Either way, connections or relationships. Happiness, just being happy. Being satisfied, just being satisfied. Another is helping people. Doing what you can, that you feel is living a moral life or doing something to make a difference. And lastly, legacy. I made one category, but within this category, some of the answers really did differ, meaning that like the legacy of what was left behind was either family, my kids, which some of them I did by reading. By the way, these answers, some people really need me work to calculate my results here. I had to make a lot of judgment calls of what fit best into what answers to do my best. And so that, of course, is on the user of the survey. And so some of the ones that had a lot written there fell more into connections, relationships, some felt more into love, some fell, but I didn't end up doing percentages because I realized for this one is a lot of them dipped into a lot of these different pools. Under legacy, there was family, the legacy of family, the legacy of knowledge or breakthroughs you make, arts or creation of any kind, whether it's the creation of people, whether it's the creation of bonds, whether it's the creation of books or any kind of art or any kind of intelligent discovery or just making a difference and people remembering you for the differences you made or the kindness that you gave. Or so it was really, really hard to give a percentage for this question, which is why it is just listed categories, the 7 categories that I have, which I feel is fair for that, because this is a very, very intricate of the questions. The other were able to be yes, no, maybe so. But some people did do the yes, no, maybe so's and then gave me a giant thing where I had to literally just read without that yes or no or not sure presence and had to make a judgment call based on it. Some of them easy, some of them not so much. And then lastly was what would your personal ideal be on the design of a good, quote unquote, good death? What would a good death entitle to you? And I didn't want to give a description of that. I wanted to gauge what the simplistic word would mean to somebody. Like, what would a good death be to them? That could be how they die. It could be reasons around their death. It could be things that they completed. So I kind of left that very open-ended for those results alone. And I was able to do percentages for this one. There was just the one that I couldn't. So design of a good death. 36.6, this was the most reoccurring answer to me, was so many people just said, in my sleep, the good death to me, in my sleep, fall asleep, don't wake up. I think for a long time I was even one of these people. 26 of the 71 just said, in my sleep. 14 of the 71 said, just quickly, or free of pain. I looped those in together for the purpose of this. 19.7% said, you know, quickly, free of pain. 2.8, only 2 people said they would really like to be aware of their death. They want to be aware, make plans. So I thought that would be a lot higher personally. I really believed that was going to be a lot higher. That one took me through a loop. 1 person said they just like to be unexpected. You know, they don't care how, they don't care. They just wanted it to be completely unexpected. It happens. I don't know about it. I don't care when, how, why, what's going on. 1.4%. another, which was a really, really good consideration that brought in a lot of different people, And again, I didn't categorize these. I made these categories based on answers and then went through a second time to get the numbers. And the other, another is an earned death. And what this was people who said either through like a courageous fight of any kind, or a good cause. And three people said that. Three of 71 said, you know, a good death would be an earned death. It would be, in my opinion, it would be a fight, or I would die for a good cause or for someone else. And that was 4.2%, three of the 71. Two people said doing something they love, 2.8%, doing something that they love. This was a big one. And this is one that I did expect that would be in this list, was just surrounded by loved ones when they go. When, how, it doesn't matter, but they want people around them who love them. And that's 10 of the 71, 14.1%, which was the second highest score. Third. So the first being in my sleep, that was the number one answer. Second being quickly or free of pain, which was the 19%, and then 14% being surrounded by loved ones. And then even following that was to be as complete as possible. Eight people said that, eight of the 71, 11.3%, to just live until old age where you feel like you've just really felt like you've completed your life. Or some of these answers also included like, you know, I did everything I could, and when I felt well prepared for my death, and if I have everything off my checklist, then I'm complete. That was complete as possible. I'm good to go. Like, so that was eight people. And I really liked those answers. Had a lot of words and a lot of stories I got to read, which I really appreciated. For those, if you're listening and you did the survey and you might have fallen under that, a lot of you offered a lot from my perspective. And studying psychology, that's something I really love to have. So thank you. Four people just were unsure. They don't know how they would measure it. Or maybe they were thinking of too many things and they couldn't limit it. A couple people said that they don't know how they'd limit what they could have as a good death, or even what they personally measure as a good death. And that was four people, so 5.6%. And then one smarty britches said, a good death is no death at all. I had to put that at the tail end of this. I appreciated that answer. It was witty. But then also that speaks too for like some people really do are accepting of this topic of death. And some people really just don't want to. Some people really want to stay clear away from it. They're scared. They're either scared or they're too sad, or they don't want to go through it. Even if it is a natural process, it's just not for them. And that happens. That's a shared ideal among many people, along with the people who are, you know, I'm okay as long as it's in these parameters, or, you know, or if I have a choice, this is what I would ideally prefer. And there's a lot of different concepts that surround the topic of death, how we go, the people who go around us, you know, we're affected by death, whether it's ourselves, the people around us, events that kind of just show the face of death, but death doesn't occur. There's a lot. And it's a whole other story when we're talking about bereavement. This is just talking very, very baseline concept of the word death and what people think of right when they think about it. But you know, if we were to talk about bereavement, I took a class on that last semester, I believe, and covered a section of bereavement in my crisis class and psychology and crisis. And you know, and it's something we touch base on when you want to be a counselor. And there's a lot, there's so much there. I there's a reason why there are specifically counselors that just are grief counselors. It's a very, very in-depth and intricate area of study. And there's, gosh, in psychology, you're going to find a lot of that in a lot of different areas of life. But my final thoughts is what I'll leave off on. And then I'll catch you guys next time, which I promise, I always promise. What's the point of promising it that I'm going to bring you a new episode soon when I don't know, when it hangs in the balance? You guys know why. I've already said the excuse of excuses. So my final thoughts, that's what I'm going to leave off on. And then this is going to end with Ron's interview. I did find that through the results, shared answers in the different questions did in fact come from different stages and different belief systems for these people. They could share an answer, but not be the same identification of gender or age or belief or spirituality or no spirituality. Or, you know, in my opinion, what this means is it's important to know the basics of development in order to understand that baseline. that we learn in psychology, but examination mostly needs to go into the specific person. Individuals will not just fall into the predicted baselines that we do learn, that at least I'm learning, or that others learn in this topic area, or whether you're a teacher and you have to learn this, or a psych major, or a counselor, or, you know, there's so many other educational areas, or even just on your own. While they can still serve as a great tool, these baselines in development, they serve as a great tool in a general sense. And we can make general connections when we don't have a lot to go off of and explore from there. That baseline is great, fantastic tool. But there's always, always going to be additional factors to consider. I know some of these people, and some of these people that I surveyed, a chunk I don't know very well. They're just in that social group and I don't know them well. That's important to note. So, you know, the people I do know, when I was reading their answers, I was like, that goes against that quote unquote baseline. However, I know that they went through this or this had occurred, and maybe that has something to do with it. And that's not going to be the same for everyone. That's just in their life. In fact, even the people closest to them didn't experience that, even if they were kind of around the event, or, you know, so like I said, that's my final thought. You know, just there will always be additional factors to consider, and it's important to gain the perspective where we have it. And yes, you can use these tools to help in your understanding, but just know that we can go a million different ways. Even if we believe the same thing, come from the same place, are in the same groupings in some way or another, we're all going to have a difference somewhere in that, because we're our own person. Wow, I really stumbled on that one. I think that's definitely the key that I'm done tonight. And it's not even that late. But I really appreciated this. Thank you for listening. This was a great project. Gosh, I always thank Professor Rutberg for, because that was the same professor that I was able to do this and explore another project. But giving us the lead for whatever creativity method we want to use just really is helpful when we want to explore and go on these types of tangents. And, you know, thank you for your patience. If you're a peer and you've actually listened to the entirety of this, goodness, I don't know if I would have. No, I would have. I love listening to this kind of stuff, especially this topic. So thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you. I hope to hear you guys soon. It doesn't work like that, does it? No. I hope to hear from you guys if you're a regular listener in the different social medias that I connect with you. But I hope you hear from me. God, that sounds so... I hope that I get to make another podcast episode soon and you could hear it. This isn't going to work, is it? This is not going to have a good explanation. And that's totally okay. You know what I'm getting at. I always appreciate you. I will talk to you guys next time. I'm here. As just jabbering about the things. And I live up to that. This is a lot of jabber. So thank you for sitting put and listening to this weird creature that is speaking to you now. Stay safe, everybody. And I will talk to you guys next time. Goodbye. Okay, well, first off, thank you for joining me. If you could please start with your name, your gender, if you have an affiliation with a religion.
My name is Ron. I am male and I have no affiliation with any religious group.
And your age?
30. 29 going on 30.
Yeah, okay, this week. You can say it. You have to join the 30s with me. You have to join in this with your wife. Ready? Okay, so my first question is, how do you personally view death?
I view it as an inevitability.
Do your current thoughts about death differ from any previous thoughts that you've had about it at, like, any stage of your life in the past? Whether it's, you know, as young as you can remember, yesterday, during a certain event in your life, any of the sort?
Well, as far back as I can remember, I've had the same viewpoint on death that I have to this day. And I feel like it will continue through my life.
During times in your past that you have had to deal with any sort of death in your family, do you feel that even in those times your thoughts about death were the same, or do you think that they actually developed the thought you have now with that?
I don't really know if it's developed it because, like I said, as far back as I can remember, I've always had the same viewpoint on it. So it probably did develop me into this point, but I've always had the same outlook.
In your opinion, are there any specific aspects of your thoughts about death that you're explaining that you think actually differ from others? And if there are, what do you think? Why do you think that is?
I think I have a very unique outlook on death because from my experience with most people, death is a very scary topic for most, and many people have different religious beliefs on how their life is going to go after death. I just don't have any of those viewpoints, and I honestly in some way welcome death, and that is a very small percentage of humanity right now.
No, I absolutely understand. I think that we deal with a lot of different people who have a lot of different views, whether it's fearful, accepting, or even circumstantial of the deaths that they deal with for themselves or for others. It absolutely differs. I agree with you. What do you think happens after you die? Do you have any ideals of the afterlife?
I think after death is nothing. I believe that scientifically, your energy still remains, but your consciousness, I believe that your consciousness doesn't. So I believe that once I die, there is nothing, just nothing. But I am also willing and open to the idea of happily surprise me with something after I die. But until I get to that point, I believe that there is nothing.
At this stage of your life, now that you're in the dirty 30 club now with me, so you have to think in the 30s perspective now. It's just part of the gig of turning 30 this week. At this stage of your life, if you were to die relatively soon, randomly or in any circumstance, very, very soon, what would you find most regretful?
The only regret I have in life right now, and the only regret I will have when I'm 80 years old, is not spending enough time with my family.
This family, you don't have a secret family. You have to tell me, we're in our 30s.
This specific family.
Okay, thank gosh. Whew, well, that makes me happy.
That is my only regret in life, is not being able to spend enough time with my family. As for everything else, it is what it is. That's really my sweet. Literal only regret.
That leads me to, what to you is the measure of a life well lived? How would you measure like a good life?
A good life is a life with... A good life is any life. But in terms of myself, a good life well lived is my children are happy and settled away in their own lives.
That's admirable. I
And if I didn't have children, my outlook would be to help others as much as I possibly can in life.
I think you can do both too. And I think personally, as someone who knows you well, I think that both of those are extremely applicable in the life that you are currently living.
Yes, but right since I had children, it turned from a societal, I want to help people, to a selfish, I want to help my children, to
that's not their selfish. Fault.
And I it is selfish. It is selfish in societal terms, but since I had children, yes, it is a selfish want for my kids live the best life that they can.
With social group, you mean like the social circles change once you become a parent. You know, as you go through life stages, I think that we just start to witness different circles of society, whether it be who you work with or who you live with growing up, and, you know, in your level of belonging, and then the family you create yourself. So I think that that's a really, really good point. Do you find that you think about death in daily moments at random times, or is it just in your mind an event that you will just have to eventually face?
It's just an event. I do not think about it at any point in my daily life unless it is brought up in a conversation similar to this, which I'm always welcome to having conversations like this because I feel like I have a very unique viewpoint and I like hearing other people's viewpoints. But I do find it as, like, it's just going to happen one day, so it does no good worrying about it.
If you could choose what you feel is a good death to you, what would the design of that look like?
I would want to know it is coming.
I think that I find that very, very interesting that you'd want to know. Like, how soon would you think is soon?
How soon in terms of dying tomorrow or dying when I'm 80?
In terms of you wanting to know.
Oh.
Yeah, you're going to die. Like, you say, I want to know beforehand, like,
how soon. I want enough time to where it's not stressful on my loved ones. I don't know how long that would be. A month, a few weeks, a couple of years. Whatever happens, I just would not want it to be me dying in my sleep suddenly one night. I would want a heads up on it and just know it's coming so that I can deal with my affairs in a timely manner.
Would your affairs be, if since you were in a perfect death for you, in a good death for you, and knowing, would you like to have the comfort of having some people, like, being in the hospital setting for terms of bereavement? Because I know you take that into great consideration, the people around your death, which I think is extremely admirable as well. Would you like to die in a hospital? Would you like to die at home? What would you, the circumstance of that, would you find?
Wherever, however I die doesn't matter to me. And who's around me doesn't matter to me at that time, per se, personally. But I want enough time to give my family the time to make their decision if they want to be there with me or if they just can't handle being there with me. Just that stuff. I honestly don't care if I'm surrounded by my family when I die or if I'm alone in a room when I'm going to die.
As long as you have that time beforehand.
Yes, as long as everyone around me knows and they can do what they want with that information.
In that short time before, would there be anything, you know, in the moment you said, like, I would be fine if I was alone or if, you know, medical, whatever the circumstances, whether your family chooses it or whatnot, would you find that you would have a preference at all? Like, if you would, right before that time, would you like to have a lot of family time? Or would that time before specifically be given to your family to do whatever it is for their own bereavement? Or is there anything that you would want your family in that time before to do for you?
I want them to make their own decisions on what they want to do because, like I said, a lot of people have different viewpoints. Some people might not want to see me like that, or some people would want to be right there with me. I'm fine with whatever. Personally, all I want is to know that it's coming and to have lots of snacks.
You want snacks?
That's, yeah.
Well, then that leads to the biggest question of all. Which snacks? We need to make sure we have this in writing. We can make this like a verbal contract just in case. Well, like, married, so.
That's another loaded question.
Oh, that's true. Like, you're patternized with your snacks. Well, so you could be on a Kit Kat cake. You could be on a Reese's cake. That's not what
I'm getting at. Say I know I'm going to die next year. I have the food of next year. So if I'm 80, science could have progressed.
I'm gonna go ahead and write
wanting capsulized Twinkies.
Okay, I'm gonna write a mental note to just give you a sampler of the times.
Yeah.
the snackage of the times sampler. I'm gonna put that right here in my notes for my husband.
All I want for the end is to know it's coming and for my family to decide what they want to do. Aside from that, I have no preference.
After you die, would you like, you know, do you ever think about if you want to be buried or cremated or?
I leave that again to whoever deals with it after me. It's if my kids want me to be cremated and want to keep me around, fine. If they want me to be buried somewhere so they can go visit, that's also fine.
funeral or anything like that, or do you leave that in, as well into the hands of people who are dealing with bereavement and grief? Or would there be at least any specific thing that you would want, like, as the representation of you or the in memory? Like, this was my death and this is the one thing that I would want to represent me, regardless of what other decisions people make.
The thing that represents me are my kids. And then that's why I'm so focused on them being the deciding factors in this, is that's, in the end, that's the representation of me, is how I raise my kids and how they go about life. So I really have no preference on cremation or burial or donated to science. I have no preference on that. Use me as I'm needed. If I weren't to have a family right now, I would devote my time to helping other people, so if I died in that scenario, I am remembered for my deeds in life. Because that's my outlook on death. It's mm-hmm. like, I'm dead. I have no conscience anymore.
Should I ask the question? I feel like it's probably needed after your snack question. Is the one thing you want to dictate in your, like, celebration of life or your funeral or whatever it is that happens, do you want to dictate the snacks? I feel like maybe that's a more important question to you.
No, that was more jokingly on that end.
No, don't let him fool you, folks. Anybody who's listening, please don't let him. This man is very serious about his snacks. He's probably 100% not joking about having, if you can stomach snacks that time, snacks will probably be important to you. You fell asleep once with a cinnamon bun on your face.
I know you love snacks. If I was able to choose, say, call it a last meal, I would choose what my mother would make me all the time, is egg noodles and ketchup. It's just a comforting thing and makes me think of my childhood.
I find that interesting. I actually really like that, though, that in a moment of... You know, obviously you're an adult now, whether it's soon or way far in the future, you know, if hopefully that is absolutely the case, especially for me, I definitely want to say that. And I feel like I'd have to say it, but I really mean that, is I think that in that moment, just having that comfort and reverting and thinking about a past time, I think that that's a really nice element to your good death.
Yes.
But... thank you for answering my questions. I really appreciate it. Do you have any other final thoughts or anything after this interview you want to leave on, or?
No, I really don't have anything. I guess if I were to say anything, it's like I'm open and willing to talk and discuss about anything and hope for anything in the afterlife.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.